This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, the title race is going to the wire, not twists and turns, because they both just keep winning. So it's just twists and twists, or turns and turns. Origi again for Liverpool, still a point behind a Gabriel Jesus-inspired City, while Everton slip into the relegation zone as Burnley score a goal with some passing football. They've been holding it in for so long. Arsenal get the rub of the green against a quite good Manchester United, who do air kick and penalty miss their way to defeat. The Gunners in the box seat for top four now. Spurs have decided to stop playing football for a bit. Should Bruno Guimarães have joined a big club? I'm kidding. And I'll ask Barry if he thinks James Ward-Prowse is good at taking free kicks. We'll round up some other stuff. Bayern and PSG wrap up their respective titles, and Forest Green are inspired by Ben Fisher sitting in their electric bus to get promotion. All that plus your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hi, Max.
Jordan Jarrett Bryan, hello.
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks very much. I didn't even ask you.
I just noticed. But, no, but I was preempting
it's
your
absolutely
question.
Fine. Do volunteer that information. I am interested in how you all are, of course. Paul McInnes, hello. How are you?
Thanks very much. Good to hear from you.
Let's start then at Anfield. Liverpool 2, Everton 0. Everton sort of stubbornly S-housed their way to attempt to get a point, I guess, or get something on the break, but Liverpool beat them in the end. I like Johnny Lew's report saying, look, Everton came with a plan, executed it perfectly, still ended up comfortably beaten. They tried everything to derail Liverpool except play football. Richarlison seemed to spend most of the game lying on the ground like a cow preparing for a rainstorm. Jordan Pickford deliberated over his goal kicks as if he was choosing a mortgage. I mean, Barry, you can't blame them for doing that, can you? And it almost worked.
I'd be honest, I don't think I put as much thought into getting my mortgage as Jordan Pickford did taking those goal kicks. You can't blame them. I mean, considering the amount of money they've spent and spent badly, it's a slightly damning indictment on their owner's financial largesse that they had to resort to those kind of tactics. But those kind of tactics almost worked, but ultimately they were beaten by a vastly superior football team. But for the first half, at least, they dragged Liverpool into a scrap, into a fight that Liverpool really didn't want to be in. And I think it probably took a rocket from Jurgen Klopp at half time to say, lads, look, you're better than this. Try and play football, try and score, and the goals will come. And that's ultimately what happened. I think Everton can have a very legitimate complaint that they should have had a penalty when it was still scoreless, when Joel Matip shoved Anthony Gordon to the ground. And I wonder if maybe Stuart Atwell was influenced by the Anthony Gordon dive in the first half, for which he got a yellow card. Maybe that might have had a bearing on his decision. It shouldn't, but it might have on a subconscious level. But ultimately, the better team won. And if I was an Everton fan, I'd be reasonably happy with that performance, given where they are. But I'd wonder why they haven't fought and scrapped like that in other games under Frank Lampard. So is this going to be a one-off? Or I think they're at Chelsea next week, is it? You know, will they play like that against Chelsea, or just roll over? I don't know.
Home to Chelsea, they are. We'll get onto that sort of penalty controversy in a second. The Liverpool fans started singing for Divock Origi in the 59th minute, Paul. Played a big role in the opener, scored the second. He has an interesting existence, doesn't he, Divock?
Yeah, I agree. Because I was thinking about that, and I thought my initial response was the standard one. It's like, why have you not sought to go and further your career by playing in a team, by moving to a club where you would start every week? And then you kind of think about it, and, you know, Champions League winner, title winner, this kind of cult status that is not a cult status because you're a donkey, but a cult status because you play very rarely, maybe don't look quite the kind of the embodiment of a Klopp forward, but you play very rarely and score these important goals. And, you know, when you look back, when he retires and looks, if he stays at Liverpool, you know, if the best years of his career are at Liverpool and he looks back and thinks, that's what I achieved, well, that's quite a lot, isn't it?
Paul Merson would always say when we were working together, you know, what will you tell your grandchildren, you know, and mainly your grandchildren just won't give a shit about anything you've done because they're tiny and just want some sweets. But, you know, I wonder, if your grandchild said, oh, you know, Grandpa Divock, you've got all these medals, did you play in all the matches? Do you think that makes any difference, Jordan? Or do you think he can go, oh, that doesn't really matter, it was a long time ago?
I'm not sure it matters. And I think that he's obviously wired a different way in terms of, you know, most strikers are very greedy and want to score goals and want to play. And I think he's in a very unique situation whereby he's clearly good enough to play for, start for, maybe not a top four team, but definitely a top half Premier League team. But yet he seems to be in this kind of weird vortex of being happy of playing a sub role, you know, and living off this kind of cult status of coming on and scoring big goals and being part of big moments. And that he clearly values that more than anything else. And I think it was very interesting at the end, the over exuberance from Klopp towards him. I think it's just a sign of his amazing management, because he clearly wants to make this sign to Divock Origi that you are really important to me. Well done. You're the best player in the world. I think he's quoted saying he's the best finisher at the club. It's like, no, he's not. But it's very, very smart. It clearly isn't.
I was just going to say quickly on a similar note, we're jumping forward a little bit. I noticed Mikel Arteta doing exactly the same thing with Mohamed Elneny after the Arsenal game. That sort of taking that moment to celebrate the unsung player when they've had a good performance. It's you know, part of that touchy feely canny management that is so fashionable nowadays.
You're angling, Paul, for a big embrace at the end of this podcast. You're not on that often, you know, like, maybe I should use you more. I'm really sorry about it, but like, I really value you, because sometimes during a pod you need Paul McInnes to come in and deliver, and he does. And he's very, you know, he could go off to the Football Ramble and just go week in, week out, but he doesn't. He sticks with the Football Weekly, and for that I am absolutely delighted.
So sorry, Max. So what is Barry then? If Paul is the Divock Origi, the one that comes in every now and again, what's Barry who starts every single week? Who is he, the Salah then of the Football one, Weekly?
Is he sort of like, is he Højbjerg? He starts every week and the fans aren't sure why, yeah. But like, the manager really likes picking him. But back to this game, Jordan Henderson came on, like, he's so good. I think he's kind of, I don't know if he's underrated. I don't care. I think he's better than a lot of people probably suggest he is.
Max, I've got something to add to this. For a Premier League Hall of Fame event last week when they inducted 8 new members. Several of them were on the premises. Ian Wright, Patrick Vieira, Wayne Rooney. Rooney gave a very good interview, was asked about who he thought was currently playing that should be in the Hall of Fame. And he said, there's obvious ones, Harry Kane, Salah, and Kevin De Bruyne, but the guy he would add would be Jordan Henderson, which coming from a blue.
Well, I agree with Wayne Rooney. Yeah, I agree with him. I don't know if Luis Diaz Barry should be in just for that pointless bit of control, but I really enjoyed it.
He's been a brilliant signing. I've been hugely impressed with him and Bruno Guimarães, who arrived in the Premier League January. Guimarães, obviously, at Newcastle. I think that was a dangerous bit of skill to attempt in a derby. He could have got kicked into the stand. Hugely impressive. And I also agree that Jordan Henderson is a good footballer.
Excellent.
I mean, it's a point I've made before, but when he was assigned by Kenny Dalglish from Sunderland for, I think, 14 million, which at the time was a lot of money. And a lot of people thought it was ridiculous. And Kenny Dalglish always stressed, I am paying this money for his potential. And what potential it was and how he has fulfilled it is remarkable.
Rob says, what's richer, claiming to have been unfairly denied a penalty after getting booked for diving, or this Bavarian cream pie? He sent me a picture of a very rich-looking cream pie. And Neil says, I've been watching football since 1971. I still find the phrase about the penalty area, quote, anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul, a complete cop-out and nonsensical. A foul's a foul, right? And that is the Anthony Gordon, the second incident, Jordan, and Barry alluded to it, I think it was a penalty, wasn't it?
It was a penalty, and you alluded to the fact that, well, the view that was his previous going down easily influential in not getting that decision. He's actually got previous before this game. He's dived a lot in previous games, and I just wonder if there's a subconscious.
Hang on, Jordan. Hang on, Jordan. He's English. He can't.
You're right. Totally right there. Totally right. I think it was influential in not giving it. It is a pen. He's barged him in his back inside the box, and I don't think he goes down. He doesn't need to go down in that position in that area of the pitch unless he's nudged. So I think it was a clear penalty. I thought the referee got besides that. Got a lot of flack for how he managed to referee the game. Sorry, because I thought he had generally a good game. I don't know if that's a common view here, but I was in WhatsApp groups and seeing on Twitter the referee's having an absolute mare. And there was an example of the Mane situation where he could have been sent off twice within like 5 seconds. But to be fair to the referee, he was dealing with other things. He can't see everything that's happening within a melee. So I'm not really one to piling on referees, and I thought the referee got a little bit of the penalty that he didn't give aside. I thought generally he had a good game.
Frank Lampard says, you don't get them here. If that was Mo Salah at the other end, he gets a penalty. I'm not trying to create conflict. It's just the reality of football. I've played in teams in the top half of the league. You get them. That was a penalty for sure. It would have been great at some point in his Chelsea career if he'd said it wasn't a penalty, but we got it because we're doing really well and we're a big club. But Liverpool haven't conceded a penalty at Anfield for 14 months. Haven't conceded a penalty this season, home or away. Did concede 9 last season, the 5th most in the league. Do we believe this, Barry, that you know it is harder to get a penalty away at a big club?
Yes, but not for the reasons Frank Lampard says. It's harder to get a penalty away at a big club because you spend far less time in the big club's penalty area. And therefore, the chances of getting fouled in there are a lot slimmer. So he's probably right, but for the wrong reasons, I think.
You don't think it's the case that there's a sort of pressure that it materialises in the air at a big stadium, which means that all of a sudden a referee on a knife-edge decision takes the more cautious decision in a big tech? Because I kind of feel like that is the case.
I think, mate, I mean, I would bottle absolutely every, occasionally in village cricket, you'd have to umpire, you know, if you were batting at 6 and you forgot to go for a wee at the crucial moment and they said, can you do the first 10 overs? And if anybody shouted at me, I would just give it out because I hopefully Stuart Atwell has more willpower than I do. I think there probably is something there. But I guess the next question is, do you want VAR to overturn that decision or not? Do you want VAR to look at something like that and say, that is actually a foul? It's is it clear and obvious? I don't know. I'm sort of losing the will to live even asking you the question. So I'll move on. Joe says, can you confirm that Alan only had 2 successful passes of 6 and they were both from kickoffs? I haven't checked the stats, but we believe that's what happened. He was playing quite defensively, I suspect, but that's a bit like that Gerrard heat map when he got sent off. You know, it's just a dot walking on the pitch, a dot and walking off again. And lots of people very much enjoyed Alisson taking the piss out of Jordan Pickford by going down in installments when he collected the ball in the 94th minute. And wow, the crowd absolutely loved that, didn't they? We'll talk about Everton and Burnley and the relegation scrap in a minute. First off, Man City 5, Watford 1. Famously strikerless Manchester City seemed to have quite a good option at striker in Gabriel Jesus. He had only scored 7 all season before this game. I mean, Barry and I were talking about this yesterday, so forgive us for repeating ourselves if you listen to all of our output. But I'm just ready for people to start asking, Jordan, do we talk about Gabriel Jesus enough or do we talk about him the right amount? Is he good? I don't know if he's good. He's like an Uber Origi, right? He's better than that. He plays more than that. But whenever you list Manchester City's riches, you don't mention him.
And I think we talk about him the right amount. I think he had a phenomenal game against a very poor team. His goal record at Manchester City, if you look at it, actually is quite impressive. And it's better than most strikers. But I'll caveat that with the fact that he's playing for Manchester City. You get a lot of chances. But I've also seen him play really poorly, Man City, where he's been very ineffective and he's done very little in games they've won and lost. So I don't think because he had a phenomenal game on the weekend that we should kind of fall into the trap of, you know, is he underrated? He's amazing. He's brilliant. I think he's a very, very good player. My club, Arsenal, are linked with him very heavily. And I think he could, through the middle, do a job for a team like mine. It feels like he's probably about the type of bracket striker we can get. And he wants to play down the middle. So I wouldn't, you know, I'd be more than happy to welcome him to the Emirates next season. But I think we talk about him a lot, but I think he's also in that El Nene and Origi bracket of managers that really overpraise when they do well, because, you know, he does a job more often than not when he comes in. But no, I think he's a talented player. I think when he first came to England, I remember there being Brazilian journalists that were saying, you know, he's going to be as good as Neymar, but people don't talk about him in the same bracket. And it hasn't obviously quite worked out that way. But I definitely think he's a talented striker that another club could easily get, you know, 18, 20 Premier League goals a season.
Watford, meanwhile, are down pretty much, aren't they? They play Burnley in the next game at home, which, you know, they have to win everything now if they want a miraculous recovery. They've lost their last 10 at Vicarage Road, which is so bleak, isn't it, Barry? Do you think Roy's regretting taking this on, or he doesn't mind?
I don't know, really. I suppose it depends on how his retirement was going, whether he was content. Just, you know, he's a voracious reader, I believe. He might have been watching box sets and... Or he might have been really bored and getting under Mrs. Hodgson's feet. And perhaps that's why he took the job. I wouldn't say he regrets it, but they've won 8 points out of a possible 39 with him in charge. I'd say he's very disappointed with that return. But, you know, his management career, even if this does turn out to be his one last job, his management career will not be judged on this, even though it's his most recent appointment. But, you know, he might be quite enjoying getting out of the house and back to work. Who knows? Who knows?
Thomas says, with 7 points in 3 matches since firing Sean Dyche, would Burnley have won the Champions League by now if they'd fired him 3 seasons ago? Unbeaten in 3, 2 wins. Does it mean they were right to sack him, Paul?
It's looking kind of like it, isn't it? I mean, they did play with a real kind of confidence. You know, Wolves are sort of in the limbo between chasing Europe and being on the beach. But it's you know, Wolves have been a tough, stubborn opponent for many a side this season, and Burnley matched them, and they scored a very nice goal. Blind pass from Dwight McNeil to Weghorst to cut it back for Vidra to finish well. And it looked like they had an idea, and it looked like they were confident. And that is something that is kind of magical, and it's very, very difficult to get when you're in that kind of position. And looking at Everton and the chances they created and the lack of confidence they had in front of goal is proof that it's very, you know, difficult to generate. So if there was something that we don't know about, that, you know, it had gone a little bit sour with Dyche, or that it was a little bit of an oppressive atmosphere and just kind of lifting those clouds for 3 weeks and 12 points or something like that, that could be an incredible decision. I mean, at the time it happened, I didn't think that was what was going on, and I thought it was a hasty owner. But, you know, 7 points in 3 games is a massive haul when you're at the bottom of the table.
On Match of the Day 2, they said, look, if brackets insert a good team had scored that goal, we'd be talking about it all week. I'm not sure we'd be talking about it all week, Barry. It was a good goal. But I mean, come Friday, I'd really be stretching it out. When I said, good morning, love. I tell you what, that Vidra goal, took it well, didn't it? It was just behind him. Lovely move.
I had the exact same thought when I heard them say that on Match of the Day too. I suppose by Burnley standards, it was... Messi-esque or Man City-esque. It wasn't all that, but priceless goal for them. You would imagine they will beat Watford away. They seem to have a great team spirit. I've no idea whether they'll stay up or not. Everyone seems to think it's between them and Everton. I don't think Leeds are out of trouble yet. We'll see how they get on against Crystal Palace tonight. But yeah, Burnley's certainly given themselves a fighting chance.
I think that's an interesting point you make, because I looked at the you know, the run-ins, and I looked at the table, and then I was just looking at Burnley and Everton, and then I saw Leeds, and I was like, I thought Leeds had just been on a brilliant run. They have done really well, but they are definitely not out of this. And their run-in is Palace away, City at home, Arsenal away, Chelsea at home, Brighton at home, and Brentford away. I mean, they are all games in which Leeds could lose, Jordan. I mean, and no one has talked about them, and that sort of makes me feel a bit nervous. Them. I know the last time you were on, Jordan, I think you said something like you thought Wolves and Southampton would get relegated. It was just the hottest of hottest takes. It wasn't that, but it was something silly. Now you look at this, you look at the table now. Who do you think's going?
Well, to be clear, I think it was Brentford and Everton. I think we had two to go down the time. Brentford was a big shout, to be fair. No, you're right. I think up until the Brighton game, in that list you named there, they could well, you know, be pointless. And even, you know, Brighton, depending on, they are on the beach, literally, as well. They may well give Leeds some points there, but they're not out of it at all. I think they will be fine eventually. But no, I like you. I was under the illusion that they were clear a couple of weeks ago, and they were definitely safe. I don't quite know what's happened. Maybe Burnley's form has dragged them back into it. But yeah, if I was a Leeds fan, I'd be looking over my shoulder, because the next two or three weeks, they can find themselves back in big trouble as well.
So Leeds have got 33 points from 32 games. Burnley 31 from 33. Everton 29. From 32. Appreciate reading lists. It's quite hard to get your head around when you're listening to it, but I will give you Burnley and Everton's fixtures. Burnley play Watford, then they are home to Villa, away to Spurs, then away to Villa, then home to Newcastle, while Everton play Chelsea on Sunday, then they go to Leicester, then they go to Watford, then home to Brentford, home to Palace, away to Arsenal. It is worth saying, until we find out, Paul, isn't it, that the Everton going down would be absolutely enormous.
Yeah, it would. It would. It would be catastrophic for the club. I mean, particularly with the plans for the new stadium that they have. You know, it's not a healthy club. It's not been healthy for some time. And when clubs like that, particularly those who are accustomed to a way of doing things and being in a place, i.e. the Premier League, where things run differently from in the Championship, it's not uncommon for things to get quite worse quite quickly when clubs like that are relegated.
I remember when the links between them and Pereira were live, and it was looking like he was going to get the job, and Lampard was also mentioned at the time. And I don't want to be mean, I don't want to be cruel and go as far as to say that I hope they do go down, but the narrative that we often hear about, oh no, we don't want this guy because he doesn't know the Premier League, is a narrative that I really, really despise and hate. Now, we'll never know if Pereira would have kept Everton, well, Frank Lampard might, but we'll never know how Pereira would have done. But I remember listening to phone-ins, seeing, you know, board, even speaking to some of my Everton fan friends, and they all wanted Lampard. And the general consensus was because he knows the league. And I just think to myself, that is such a really lazy reasoning for wanting a player and definitely a manager to come to your club. And I think Lampard was never going to be qualified to do well. He may just keep them up. But I just think there's a lesson to be learned there in terms of, and I know Everton fans don't appoint the manager. I appreciate that. But the general consensus was we want Lampard over Pereira because we've not heard of this foreign guy. We've not heard of Pereira before. We don't know who he is. He doesn't know the Premier League. I think that for other clubs, I hope will be a lesson learned in terms of actually applying logic to the person that you desire.
Surely the lesson to learn, Jordan, is don't listen to phone-ins. What are you doing?
Maybe it's that.
I suppose you do host one, right? You have to listen when you're hosting. Yeah. That is
it
true.
Helps.
I've
it
been
helps.
There. Right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll do the race for the top four, starting at the Emirates. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. The UK and Ireland tour tickets are available. Go to myticket.co.uk. Here is an email from James, who says, "Hi Football Weekly, my good friends Gavin and Gemma are getting married at the weekend, and as part of their wedding gift, I was planning on buying the three of us tickets for the Glasgow live show. However, as I was about to complete my purchase and part with my money, I thought I could try and use my potential purchase as leverage. So could Barry please wish Gavin and Gemma a happy wedding day on this week's pod, and then I will then push the button on the live show tickets. Congratulations on the baby, Max. I happen to become a father for the first time on the same day as you, and I'm furious that my surname, Hubbert, isn't as easily adaptable as yours. The best I've come up with is Huberto Carlos. Can anyone do better than that? Well, look, congratulations to you. I will think on what footballer you can give your child as a name. And I will hand over to Barry to wish Gavin and Gemma a happy wedding."
I would, of course, like to wish Gavin and Gemma a very happy wedding day. I hope they have several years of happiness before it all goes horribly wrong for them and they split up in acrimonious circumstances or just get sick of each other. But yeah, have a great day.
I hope you stay together forever, just for some balance. Yes, Paul?
Tony Hubbard.
Tony Hubbard. Yeah, perfect. There you go. Very easy. Call your kid Tony. Thank you, Paul. Big hug coming your way. Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1 then. Arsenal beating Chelsea and Manchester United. Fourth place is now in their hands. Jordan, you are Arsenal. Have they been good in either game?
No. No. Chelsea were just dog awful in that game. And played into Arsenal's hands. Chelsea were absolute idiots in how in their approach. And the bringing on Thiago Silva at half-time, I feared would make them better. It made them worse. And in this game on the weekend, Arsenal were better, but still not great. They weren't brilliant. I think that says a lot about Man United, in that you can play at 60% and still beat them. That's how bad they are. So no, I don't think Arsenal were particularly impressive in terms of performance in either game. But I guess we're in that part of the season where performances don't really matter. It's about getting the points in the bag and getting the job done. I thought over the course of the entire game, I thought Arsenal just shaded it. Although United had had large spells of the game where they were on top, hit the post twice, missed the penalty. But no, I think Arsenal were worthy winners just about. Paul mentioned Elneny earlier on. He's a player that I would offer a one-year extension to. I think he's a little bit, again, in the Origi category of he seems to be content in just being a squad player. But when he comes in, more often than not, he does a job. I thought Saka, again, was brilliant. I'm concerned about Ramsdale. Ramsdale, I think, has had a really good season in terms of performances, but I'm really not liking this over-exuberance and this erraticness that he's... It's this Joe Hartness, this Jordan Pickfordness that I just think top keepers don't have. And I think if Arsenal are going to try and get back to being one of the best teams in the country again, they need a keeper that I think can make phenomenal, important saves, but also have the temperament of one that... you know, can really keep their cool. I thought the penalty miss, and it was a miss. He didn't even save it. And his reaction, I thought, was really over the top. And I think just the save he made and the beat of the chest, it plays well to the Arsenal gallery and the fan base for sure. But I think overall, I think he needs to work on that. But overall, I thought Arsenal were worthy winners for sure.
Isn't that just sort of something that we, in our mind, we sort of feel we need goalkeepers to exude calm and, you know, centre forwards and number 10s are allowed to sort of be flamboyant? Like, because that save from Dallow was amazing, right? Like, he's been so much better than I thought he would be. I think he's been such a success.
I mean, I kind of see what Jordan's coming at, really. Although I don't think it has to be that way. He can be demonstrative as long as he's cool in the right moment. If he starts making rash decisions in play because he gets carried away or, you know, he starts ending up having some sort of beef with Bruno Fernandes and wants to leave one on him or something like that, you know, then that becomes a problem. And I do think if you look at Alisson and Ederson, those are two keepers we're talking about who are unflappable and are incredibly calm. But I think going way back in the day now, I think back to Bruce Grobbelaar, and that was an eccentric keeper who was full of emotion and he wasn't half bad.
Joseph, can you do a minute on the Granit Xhaka redemption arc, from telling the fans to F off and being stripped of the captaincy, saying that he almost left because of sort of trolling from Arsenal fans, to now having an excellent season, blowing kisses to the Emirates? Barry?
I could never really understand the Arsenal fans' dislike of him in the first place, to be honest. On his day, he can be sensational. And we saw during the Euros, I think it was, when he was playing for Switzerland. Which game was it?
France. It was France. I think
against
was.
France. And yeah. He was just outstanding. And everyone was going like, why can't he do that for Arsenal? And very occasionally, he does do it for Arsenal. But he's also capable of horrific gaffes, lapses in concentration, silly fouls, getting daft cards. I would like to have him in a team I supported. You know, I don't mind players who mess up occasionally. And it is nice that they appear to like him at the moment, but that could all change again very quickly.
Oh, it will.
football fans are fickle, and Arsenal fans seem to be more fickle than most. So if I was him, I'd enjoy the plaudits and enjoy blowing the kisses because... the brickbats will probably follow soon enough.
Paul, Manchester United were quite good in this game, I thought.
On one way, yes. Going forward, progressing off the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, that defending early on, two air kicks, is not probably quite good at the elite level of the beautiful game. But I did feel, I felt like they had something about them in this game. I thought Sancho looked good. Ronaldo had an excellent game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Ronaldo tends to play well for all his, you know, for all the fact he's single-handedly dragging Manchester United into mediocrity. He tends to turn up in every game and score goals. But yeah, Sancho did play well. Bruno, you know, looked like he had his radar on, penalty aside. So, you know, Alanga, I think he has a high intensity to his game, which I think is important. So yeah, that combination of things looked all right, but it's just when they lose the ball, when they're turned over against them, there's so many spaces all over the pitch, just in a way that it's almost like you think it's deliberate because no top side plays that way. No top side is that open. So you think, well, what's the clever idea here by means which, you know, they're allowing people to saunter into the final third and pick their pass, but that's not the case. It's just something that just speaks to how wrong things are at United, and yeah, you know, the fact that pretty much all their defenders are bang out of form as well means that there's only so much solace to be taken from we're not really talking the entirety of the game, are we? We're talking kind of one patch in the first half, one patch in the second when they were playing good offensive football. So, yeah, I mean, it's just another bad week for United.
I think Fernandes is a fraud. I think he's one of the biggest frauds I've seen. I'm sorry.
Wow, okay, here we go.
He came into this league and he's scoring.
You were doing so well, Jordan.
I just think he's absolutely gone under the radar. Maguire's got so much heat, rightfully so. Pogba, De Gea at times, even Ronaldo. But I just feel like Fernandes has got off the hook massively. And I think if they're going to, United going forward in terms of the next couple of years, they need to look at players like him. He's got a new contract recently. I think that in a system where he actually has to be disciplined, I think he would struggle. He's been able to score goals, get assists over the last couple of years because he's been able to do what the hell he wants in a chaotic system. Whereas I think in the top teams, you can't do that. And I fear that every interview he comes out and says, we've got to do better. We've let the manager down. And then he plays the game that he played on the weekend where I thought he was poor. I didn't think he was good at all. And I'm just not having him. I'm not having him at all. Talented player, but I think for a top team winning titles, I think he has no place in that team.
Wow. I mean, I remember watching him at the Nations League and thinking, this guy is unreal. I mean, he just was absolutely brilliant. And lots of people were talking about Bernardo and João Felix and Ronaldo. I would posit that he is quite good at football, is not having the best time currently. But it's game of opinions, Jordan, isn't it? You know, phone me now.
Well, okay. I just think he's massively getting away with performances that I don't think as good as other people are saying they are. And I think he's gone under the radar because he scored a lot of goals when he first came in. But I think he did that because he's allowed to do what the hell he wants in a team that is all over the shop. The minute Ten Hag gets that team into any kind of system or structure, I think he'll struggle.
Just a note on Harry Maguire. Cheshire Police have conducted a sweep of his house after he received a bomb threat. A spokesman for Harry Maguire said in the last 24 hours, Harry received a serious threat to his family home. The safety of his family and those around him is obviously Harry's number one priority. The spokesman added, he will continue to prepare for this weekend's fixture as normal. Will not be commenting any further at this time. So, you know, football fans being not very nice people keeps happening. So look, Man United now 6 points behind Arsenal. Spurs dropped points too against Brentford. It doesn't really matter if Arsenal are playing well or not, does it, Paul, if Spurs have no shots on target?
Yeah, incredible, isn't it? I think going back to, you know, what Jordan's saying about Arsenal and not playing well and winning. But there's this kind of level that these teams are at. It's about consistency and can you kind of deliver? Can you get these performances over, you know, get good performances over a series of weeks? And that's the difference between sides that are just outside the top four and sides that are in the top four. And, you know, we thought the corner had been turned with Spurs a couple of weeks ago when they were scoring goals by the bucket load. And then, you know, two games on the trot without shots on target, I think now. And it's like, well, that's the issue there. There's the consistency obviously they're playing against the Brentford team, who are very well organised, and you know, Brighton similarly last week, I guess, they posed similar problems about, you know, you've got to work hard to get through them, and it's not something you can kind of quickly undo on the turnover on the counter. But yeah, I mean, Conte must be tearing his hair plugs out after that.
But shouldn't Conte be? Yes, but isn't it partly his fault? I mean, he doesn't really change anything. Like if you can't beat a low block with, you know, trying to get Harry Kane to drop deep and then get the runners in behind, you've got to do something different. You know, he is one of the best managers in the world. Why isn't he doing anything, Barry? Why isn't he doing anything else?
I don't know, Max. You'd really have to ask him that.
He's not here.
I don't know. He presumably trusts the process, and the process in the last two games has let him down. Brighton cut off the supply line to Harry Kane, and that did for Tottenham in that game. I'd say Thomas Frank, you know, is also a progressive, youngish manager like Graham Potter. He had Pontus Janssen basically man-mark Kane for the entirety of this game. And, yeah, I can only imagine that Conte is reluctant to change his system because he believes in his system. And in the past two games, his system has not worked.
The timing of that draw as well is poor for him as well. Unfortunate, because 24 hours later, he's been linked now to the PSG job. And we're expecting Pochettino to be fired in the next kind of day or two. If he believes that top four in Champions League football isn't there, and it might be in bad taste to kind of jump ship straight away, but if he believes Champions League football isn't going to be there for Spurs, I mean, that may well be another reason why the PSG job would become more appealing to him.
Let's go to Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 1, West Ham 0. In this kind of didn't really matter that much between third and seventh. Chelsea just seeing off a West Ham side that made six changes before that game on Thursday night. It felt to me, Paul, like the Craig Dawson special. He blocked so many chances, eventually got sent off. Is he the ultimate honest pro in the Premier League currently?
On the spot, try and think of another one. But I mean, he certainly qualifies, doesn't he? He's certainly somebody who lacks any kind of scintilla of glamour about him, but yet has forged a strong career in the top flight. I mean, he's sort of having to do it by himself for West Ham at the moment due to their other injuries at centre half, and maybe it became a little bit too much for him. But it's unfortunate for West Ham because the season appears to be going in two different directions at once, with, you know, this incredible passage through the Europa League and a kind of league form that's sputtering a bit, and will probably, you know, see them finish outside of European qualification spots at the end of it.
I suppose Craig Dawson is the antithesis of a fraud, right? You know, he's absolutely genuine. You know, there's nothing fraudulent about Craig Dawson, is there? No one couldn't ring up and say, I think Craig Dawson's a fraud. That's not a phone call, is it, Barry?
Well, I mean, he's done incredibly well for himself, because when he couldn't get in the Watford side in the Championship, and then West Ham bought him, and he's more or less ever present and doing very well in a good team. So I'm not sure what age he is. He seems to have been around for a very, very long time. But
31,
yeah. So, yeah, you know, his career looked like it was sort of fizzling out, and it's quite the rejuvenation, and fair play to David Moyes for bringing him in and seeing that potential there.
Cameron says, even though Barry is a goal scoring legend, do you think he would have saved the Chelsea penalty? how much did you laugh, Barry? I just thought it's utterly hilarious, that penalty.
Yeah, Jorginho kind of has this reputation as a very, very good penalty taker, but he's missed some critical ones. Like, he missed a couple that cost Italy qualification for the World Cup, basically. I think he missed one in the shootout against England, did he? Or am I mistaken? Yeah. Yeah. And then this one was just awful. just really bad, comically bad. But they got away with it.
I think you actually would have saved it. Like, of all the, you know, would you have scored that nonsense? I think you may actually have just fallen on it. You know, I think it's possible.
Yeah, because I mean, even if he sent me the wrong way, I think I'd have time to get up and go the right way and still stop it.
Have you fallen over recently, Barry? And how long did it take you to get up?
I haven't fallen over for a while. It does take increasingly long to sort of get out of bed. stretch out various joints and creaks and kinks.
Exciting news for West Ham and Rangers fans. We are doing a special Europa League pod this Friday and next Friday, as Guardian Football Weekly deems the semi-final the right time to take this competition seriously. And that'll do for part two. We'll round up the rest of the Premier League in just a second. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Norwich 0, Newcastle 3. Before we do Newcastle, Paul, would you like a word on your beloved?
Yeah. I do have a particular thing that's I'd like to raise, if it hasn't already been discussed and I've missed it. But I doubt it has. There was a lot of bad feeling at Carrow Road on Saturday, and partly because of another insipid defeat. But the sporting director, Stuart Webber, had given an interview over the weekend, I think it was in the Times, where he talked about his passion, which is climbing mountains. And he's been given special dispensation by Norwich to build towards climbing Mount Everest at the end of the year, which is going to involve him doing Kilimanjaro, something in the Alps, something in South America, blah, blah. And he said, if it's 90% of my time is not good enough for the club, then I'll walk, or I would have walked. But the club said it's okay for me to do that, so I'm going to stay. A lot of people didn't like this. They thought it was a little bit arrogant, and also signalled that he wasn't fully engaged with the Norwich project, him being responsible for the club's well-being and all. I just wondered what the panel thought of that sort of approach to working.
It's a step further than Harry Kane going to Augusta. I love the idea of Harry Kane saying, I'm going to climb K2. You know that?
I'll be back on Tuesday.
I don't know. I mean, like, work-life balance is important, isn't it? It's only a football club. It's not, you know, he can do most of it. I can see why you'd be annoyed if it was your... What's his role? Director of football?
Sporting director.
What does that do?
Well, you see, we don't have a CEO at Norwich, right? So basically, you know, there are people who run the money side and he runs the football side. But effectively, he only really answers to the board of directors. So he kind of does run everything. And yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I think if you're somebody like yourself, Max, who's well-rounded and thoughtful, you might say, yeah, I mean, who's to say that 90% of his time isn't enough to do the job, and surely he will be thoroughly committed then. But there's also a lot of people who think, no, this is a really, really important job. This is... The most important thing in my life, if I was doing it, I would give 100%, and you're saying you'd only give 90%.
And in football, you are obliged at all times to give at least 110%. So technically, he's working at 20%.
My bad.
Rather than just 10. I mean, I get why people might be annoyed, but does it really matter? It's, you know, with the greatest will in the world, Norwich almost certainly won't get relegated from the Championship next season. And if they don't get promoted, they would have been in the Championship the season after anyway, having got promoted and gone back down. So maybe all of Norwich should just take a year out and everyone go climbing Mount Everest.
He might unearth like a, you know, some
a
Sherpa, a Sherpa with incredible stamina, who could be a box to box midfielder, who could add the running, the legs that they need to
play some half decent
in the Premier
football.
League. Exactly.
Yeah.
But him ascending various mountains, going up various mountains, and then going back down again, it is sort of quite a Norwich thing.
Well done.
Look, Newcastle were good. They are quite good, Jordan, aren't they? We've talked obviously about where the money comes from, and we quite often forget to talk about that with Man City, and then we do it with Newcastle, which annoys Newcastle fans, and that's probably fair enough. But that finish from Guimaraes, that dink, was beautiful, wasn't it?
It was lovely. I mean, I'm gutted because we were meant to get him in January, and he chose Newcastle over us. And I'm seeing with Mr. Player there. No, their run's been really, really good. And I'm going to go early here, but if Eddie Howe gets Newcastle 9th, should he be in the conversation for Manager of the Year?
I don't think he should be in the conversation for Manager of the Year because purely on the basis of his refusal to answer questions about Newcastle's owners in any meaningful way. That's the only but in terms of what he has achieved on the pitch, yeah, probably. But I think those straight bats he plays, I'm just a humble football coach, I think that should rule him out of the conversation.
Jono says, Barry, that James Ward-Prowse can take a good free kick, can't he?
I thought this was one of his
worst,
poorer, good free kicks. Yeah, I wanted James Ward-Prowse free kick straight into the top corner. None of this bouncing on its way into the bottom corner. And the Brighton wall was an absolute mess. Because he just shot through a gap, didn't he? And
you're disappointed with a free kick. I mean, that's the level that James Ward-Prowse has got to now, that he can score free kicks and they aren't good enough. I'm fully on board with you. If they don't either stick in the stanchion and there are no longer stanchions, or they bounce off the crossbar down and then the top of the net, they should be ruled out. He's a wonderful footballer. I would, with respect to Southampton fans, I'd be interested to see him in a top side to see if he can do everything that a central midfielder needs to do. I can't see what the holes in his games are, Paul, that mean he couldn't do all of the other midfieldy bits and then score you 10 free kicks a season.
No, maybe he could be bigger, physically bigger. But, you know, he carries himself well. Maybe he could be a bit faster. But, yeah, technically he's as good as anybody, yeah.
Paul, you have written a piece today about the fan-led review, haven't you? So the government are going to seek to implement all 10 of the key recommendations of the fan-led review into English football, setting up the possibility of a sea change in the governance of the national sport. This sounds good to me.
Yeah, I think let's go with a caveat, shall we? Just so that we don't, you know, because it is the government and it is English men's football, which is sort of been resistant to any kind of positive reform for such a long time that, you know, people's grandfathers are telling their grandchildren about the lack of reform they remember. I think the caveats would be, first of all, it's not happening right now. They're going to announce a white paper, which is where you sort of set out the scope for what the law's going to be in the summer. It's not going to be legislated in the next year. And that was something a lot of campaigners wanted to see happen because they thought if it didn't, it could get kicked into the long grass. And Tracy Crouch herself, in response to this announcement by government, has said that's her concern over timing. Then there's second, you know, the devil's in the detail. What are they going to do? What powers are they going to give this regulator? It's one of the examples that's been given a lot. And I think by Crouch herself, is they're going to beef up the owners and directors test, which everybody acknowledges is not fit for purpose, really. And they're going to introduce an integrity aspect to it. But what does integrity mean? And I think they're quite keen to kind of copy what goes on, say, in the banking sector, where there has to be integrity tests. But I think if the integrity test that applies there would not have stopped, say, the Saudi sovereign wealth fund from taking over Newcastle. So there's the question of, you know, what will these expanded powers do? And the third one is, I think ultimately, as with so many things, the problems in English football come down to money and a massive amount of it at the top and not so much of it at the bottom. And I think in their announcement, the government have made clear that they are going to expect football itself to sort out how to increase redistribution down the pyramid, looking at parachute payments, that sort of stuff. Now, you know, that's pretty much like asking the wolf to look after the hen house. And it also comes after a year in which they've been saying to football, the Premier League and the EFL, sort it out between yourselves, otherwise we'll get other people to do it. And so, you know, the otherwise we'll get other people to do it has now been booted out and it's just sort out yourself. So I think ultimately that could be quite a big spanner in the works of any proper reform. But the independent regulator, which will be able to look at clubs' finances and say, you are running an unsustainable loss here, you need to sort it out, otherwise we can sanction you. That's an important change. And that will stop a lot of chaotic owners, particularly lower down the pyramid, I think.
Thank you, Paul. Just a note, Archie's going to be on the pod on Friday. We'll talk about Bayern Munich winning their 10th successive Bundesliga title. And if that is the death of German football, we can have that conversation for the 10th time. PSG won Ligue 1. Philippe's on the podcast on Wednesday. And we can ask if that is the death of French football. Let's congratulate Forest Green. Ben Fisher was there to witness their promotion. They drew 0-0 away at Bristol Rovers. He sat right at the front of the bus, which producer Joel says is a little bit teacher's pet. the first team in the world to travel to an away game in an electric coach. And he sent a lovely, they're on a B road there, which is nice. It's a nice photo that Ben sent. If you'd like to go to his Twitter account, you can see a picture of a bus driver. So, you know, don't know how busy you guys are, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. Gavin says, could Barry dive as well as Charlie Adam did?
Yes. I'm sort of similar size to Charlie Adam, similar dimensions. So, yeah, I'd think just keel over and let gravity do the rest. I noticed, Max, in your brief EFL roundup, you left out Sunderland's 5-1 win over Cambridge United.
Yes.
Was that a deliberate omission?
Not at all. I mean, as I said, yes, you know, you have the bragging rights. If you want to use the bragging rights, you're very welcome to brag. It feels only right in a footballing context. It was a game, frankly, that didn't mean anything to us. We had a player sent off unfairly early on, but you are better than us. And I wish you all the very best for the rest of the season, Barry. And if you get promoted, I'll be delighted for you.
Okay, thanks.
It's worth mentioning on that Charlie Adam dive. One, had he done that when Jorginho took the penalty, he would probably have saved it, even though it was so slow. But Callum Bell got in touch, says, look, if this gets mentioned on the pod, long-time listener, I'd like the world to know that it was a Dundee United fan that made Dundee captain Charlie Adam go viral for doing his best Woody from Toy Story impression. Thank you. Yes, sir. It was Callum Bell's tweets that went around the world from that. Gerard says, as we have 2 minutes to go, Gerard says, now that Joachim has retired from football, is Gigi Buffon the only player from Championship Manager 01-02 that is still playing professional football, the greatest manager game of all time? I mean, I was very much Championship Manager 93 era, I would say. It started getting it, and that didn't have real players. So you'd have like Ken Weggerly or Roger Miller, but M-I-L-L. ER. Oh, no, hang on. Championship Manager 93 did. That was the first time you got real players. And then they would regen like Ken Weggerly. And I remember a Norwegian talking to me on a boat on the Great Barrier Reef. And when I told him I was a Cambridge fan, the first thing he said to me is Tom Youngs as good in real life as he is on Championship Manager? But I don't know if any of you three were addicted to those kind. I mean, I had every single football manager game you could imagine, but I don't know if any of the three of you took part in those things.
I have never played it in my life. Ian McIntosh, formerly of this parish, once tried to get me into it on a train somewhere, and I completely lost interest after about 5 minutes.
Yes. I mean, I don't think it... I mean, it's for kids, in my opinion, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. Miles Jacobson will be very angry with me for saying that. Yes, Paul?
Yeah, I lost several years of my life to a Football Manager. And I don't really regret it. I used to play with my closest friends and I scored some crucial victories against them where we used to have to take turns around the laptop and stuff. So I found it quite formative. But it got, for me, when you get older, you get more responsibilities, blah, blah, blah. And Football Manager just got so complex in the full fat version of the game. It takes so long to play. It's just, you know, you really have to kind of pretty much be full-time at it, which is what people do. You know, if you go on Twitch, that's what people are doing.
I can't blame having kids or a family or a wife. That's why I stopped. I lost a lot of money. That's why I stopped. I was betting friends and I was losing a lot of money in being Cambridge 1 year or, you know, Birmingham City and thinking we'd get promoted and there'd be 8-9 of us playing. And yeah, it was bad for me by the end. So I had to give it up just because I was spending too much money on it.
Do you know, I found Championship Manager 93 on you know, you could download it. And when I was in Sydney for 3 months, Jay wasn't around, et cetera, et cetera. I started playing it. God, I got addicted. But that was really like rudimentary Football Manager, Paul. You know, it was like you just played 4-4-2 direct ball and you didn't really do anything. And then it would just be like S. Claridge, race is clear. He slides it past the keeper and it's in. And then that was all. You just watch the games. It took about 2 minutes. You get a season done pretty quickly. Ah, glory years. I had so many. There was one I had called, I can't remember if it was Premier Manager. But anyway, my best player was suddenly out for 174 weeks and it went diagnosis, car crash. I just like the idea of the doctor just saying, oh, take another look at this and go, I think you've had a car crash there, mate. Probably be out for a while. Anyway, I could talk about football computer games forever and ever. Maybe we'll do a pod special on it one day. That'll do for today's podcast. Barry, thank you.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Paul.
Thanks, Max.
Cheers, Jordan.
Anytime, mate.
Champions League will be back on Wednesday. Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.